This is Hillbilly Solid. I'm your host, Silas House, and we're talking to curator and historian John Coleman here on WUKY 91.3. John Coleman is a native of Belfry in Pike County, Kentucky, and received his Ph.D. in history at the University of Kentucky, where he was the James Still Fellow. He serves as the curator and assistant director at the Mary Todd Lincoln House here in Lexington. He also conducts a wonderful historical walking tour of the city that we'll be talking about a little later. John was a consultant for the Kentucky LGBT Heritage Initiative funded by the National Park Service. He is doing so much amazing work for preservation of our state's history. And among his biggest projects is that he has been documenting the lives of people who had to stay largely hidden until only recently, LGBT people in Kentucky. Along with the artist Robert Morgan, Coleman has compiled more than 12,000 items and 100 hours of recorded interviews into the Faulkner Morgan Pagan Babies Archive of LGBTQ Life in Kentucky. A few months back, Coleman discussed and displayed the items from the archive at the Central Library in Lexington, and it was standing room only. I tried to get in and was turned away because the audience had reached the fire code limit. So we are so happy to have John here with us today. Welcome to Hillbilly Solid.
Well, thank you, Silas. It's definitely a treat.
So tell us about the archive and the kinds of things that we could expect to find there.
Oh, well, the kinds of things you can expect to find there. Our scope is certainly broad. So everything from Xerox copies of court cases to Andy Warhol's underwear. So it is, it's a lot of material. It's particularly rich in visual images, which makes us unique. So we have a lot of manuscripts, ephemera, things like posters, flyers, T-shirts. It really runs the gamut, all of which has a tie to the LGBTQ community of Central and Eastern Kentucky. That's our one focus.
Well, now I have to ask how Andy Warhol's underwear ended up in Kentucky.
Well, that's a story. The underwear, it's one of our favorite items. It's definitely something that makes people stop in their tracks. The underwear, it's a white T-shirt. It's a pair of briefs. They're written all over by Andy, signed by him. And the story is both, it embodies really a couple of things that we do in the archive. So the underwear came to us from a man named Shay Metcalf. And Shay Metcalf grew up in Lancaster, Kentucky. Very handsome, extraordinarily smart, makes quite a scene here in Lexington. And then he moves off to New York in the late 70s. And there he makes a scene too, along with quite a number of other Kentuckians. He becomes sort of ingrained in this Warhol scene. And Warhol gives him this sort of decorated pair of underwear as a gift. He actually gave Shay several gifts, including a collection of soup cans, of course, from Warhol. Shay was also photographed by Warhol. In fact, he shows up in Warhol's book, America, which was published in the 1980s. But Shay's beautiful, talented. He runs in a lot of circles, and he's in New York. He's right at the center of it all, so he quickly succumbs to AIDS. Knowing that he was dying, he gifted these things out to various folks. He gave this to his friend, Bob Morgan, the co-founder of the archive. And so they remain today in the archive. And it's a he really stands in for the story of a lot of young gay Kentucky men, right, who left the region in the 70s, early 80s, and who came home in caskets.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Bob Morgan, you know, he's just one of Lexington's best personalities, you know, true. And just one of the kindest people. Now, if I understand it correctly, he sort of prodded, he was the impetus for this about 3 years ago, is that right?
Oh, definitely. Bob's the impetus for a lot of things, the archive included. And so it started back in 2013, and we were coming off a great year for the queer history of Kentucky. Bob had a successful show at Transylvania University called I'll Be Your Mirror, which looked at the history and the sort of contemporary lives of queer Kentuckians. And in December that year, a film premiered called The Last Gospel of the Pagan Baby. Yeah, it's a great documentary from Gene Donahue. And so, as was the case, Bob and I, we were at lunch at the Loudoun Square Buffet, if no one's ever been there. We should go. It's an institution. And Bob was talking about this large collection that both the documentary and, of course, his show at Transylvania really pulled from. And he was worried. You know, Bob is hitting in his late 60s, I hope he doesn't mind me saying. And he was thinking about what's going to happen to these things. Mm-hmm. And there was concern. If you place them in a large institution, how will the institution respond to some of that material? And so his idea was that it simply needed to go to an individual who was really going to take care of the stuff, mm-hmm. who had a personal vested interest in it. So he wanted it to go to another queer person. He knew of my interest in history. I'd already started a small collection of my own. And he asked over lunch if I'd be interested in taking care of this for him. I said, sure. My one stipulation is he couldn't just bring it in boxes. We had to talk about it as he gave it. Mm-hmm. And so on November 9th, 2014, I went to Bob's house. We had our first session. So I set up my camera, and he just started pulling things out. And it became a mode of storytelling. So these items didn't become just items. They solicited stories.
Right.
And so an hour had passed, and we'd only gone through like 20 things. And so I was back the next Sunday. And so every session gets recorded. And before we knew it, the archive had really morphed into something that was much larger than what we had originally thought it would be, you know, just Bob and myself. Other folks started to contribute things to the archive. And this past Sunday, we just had our 74th session. So, which has now included dozens and dozens of LGBTQ folks from across Kentucky. Mm-hmm. We've done interviews, you know, from right here in Lexington all the way to Auckland and New Zealand.
Wow.
So it's it's becoming an international mm-hmm. story.
Well, I read that the Kinsey Institute had wanted the collection, but you all are intent on keeping it in Kentucky, right?
Right. So when the archive was founded, we pretty much had about three simple rules for its future: that it would stay intact as one group, that it would be available to the public for research, and third, we want it to stay in Kentucky because it is a Kentucky story. Mm-hmm. Right now we are in the collecting phase, and we hope to be in that phase, I don't know, for the next 30 years or so. And then, of course, there is a contingency plan, right? If Bob and I were to get hit by a bus, it'll be taken care of. And so we are right now collecting. We have our goals, and so we look forward to seeing it as part of a larger institution in the future.
Right. So what would be the oldest thing in the collection?
Let's see. The oldest thing we have is probably a series of photographs of unidentified kind of gender-bending women dressed as men.
Mm-hmm.
So these definitely date till somewhere in the latter half of the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
They're some of our best pieces. If you look at the article done by Tom Eblen, he uses one of these photographs of two women.
Right.
The oldest story we have, though, is much older than that. It dates all the way back to 1780.
Wow.
And it is between two veterans of the American Revolution, Robert Craddock, originally from Virginia, and Peter Tardieu, who was French. They served together during the American Revolution. Mm-hmm. They're awarded land grants in what is now the area of Bowling Green, Kentucky. And so by the mid-1780s, they're here in central Kentucky. They spend time in Lexington. They spend time in Danville. They're prominent men. They're members of the political club with folks like Isaac Shelby and John Brown. There are letters that exist between them and Henry Clay. So they're well connected. Eventually, they do make it out to their lands in western Kentucky. And there they set up a plantation called Hermitage. They are enslavers. They enslave African Americans. Peter Tardieu starts a school there at the plantation, which is arguably the first school for black children in the state of Kentucky, or what would become Kentucky. He actually educates a young boy named Russell, who will go back to Danville and set up the first black school taught by black people for black children. At the end of their lives, they do emancipate those that they had enslaved. Mm-hmm. In fact, their entire plantation is divided up amongst those folks. And they were buried right in the middle of it. They had also set up a grant which was funding the public schools of Bowling Green until the 1920s.
And did people know that they were a couple?
People knew. In fact, there was a historian in the 1920s. He was one of the founders of Western Kentucky University. He writes an article on these two men, and he explicitly says they were queer. That is the word he uses.
Wow.
And he says, but even their faults led to virtue's side, an unusual phrasing. Mm-hmm. And so he would have been alive, certainly, to have known people that knew Craddock and Tardivu.
You need to write a book about this.
Yeah, they're a fascinating couple. They were buried together there on what became an African-American community. And around the turn of the century, from the 19th to the 20th, the city of Bowling Green removed their bodies and buried them in Bowling Green's main cemetery, still buried together. And on their tombstones, they refer to each other as their comrade in arms. Mm-hmm. So Kentucky is lucky to have such an early story.
Yeah.
That, you know, as early as the 1920s, people recognized them as a couple.
So where is all this stuff? Where is it housed?
Right. So the archive is housed in archival boxes in an archival setting. So it's protected from things like fire. You know, there's pest control, all of that, a security system. So everything is, it's our biggest expense, everything housed in archival boxes. Each session gets a collections guide, which lists everything that was talked about in that session, along with time marks, so that in the future someone could bring up that video from the session, go to that minute mark, and they will see whoever is contributing that piece. They will be able to see them talking about that piece in real time.
Wow.
And so we're hoping that it will be a significant resource for the future.
There can't be too many like state collections like this in the nation.
No, not really. There is a growing movement. There is a national organization for LGBTQ archives now, Roundtable. Kentucky is lucky that there are two. So there is one located in Louisville. That David Williams has been working on for a long time. He's a great friend of ours, has given us a whole lot of assistance. That is now actually housed at the University of Louisville. It is more international or national in its scope, and they mostly collect printed materials, published materials. Right. And so ours is different in the fact that we focus solely on Central and Eastern Kentucky, and for the most part, we don't collect printed materials, unless they have a significant reason to do so. So magazines, locally printed magazines, sure, but national publications,
right.
No.
Well, you mentioned the piece that Tom Eblen wrote a few months back.
Yeah.
And it's a great piece. I encourage everybody out there to look it up. And in that piece, Bob Morgan is quoted as saying that a lot of the gay Kentucky story has to do with people leaving Eastern Kentucky or rural places to find mm-hmm. acceptance in Lexington. But there are also tales of acceptance in rural communities.
Right.
Now, you and I are both from Eastern Kentucky, mm-hmm. so I found this particularly interesting. Can you talk a little bit about those stories?
Oh, sure. So we have stories from all over Eastern Kentucky. It was kind of funny when the when we were writing that piece for the National Park Service, there was an assumption that Eastern Kentucky stories would not be easy to find. The reverse was true. Eastern Kentucky is extraordinarily rich. It holds a place in the public imagination when it comes to all kinds of things, but especially LGBTQ stories. The fact that Kim Davis made such a national scene was not right. There were other county clerks who were doing what she was doing. But the national narrative wanted mm-hmm. someone who was rural like Kim Davis. This even goes back. Few people know this, But in the early 80s, Oprah did a very famous episode about AIDS in small town America. She picked an eastern Kentucky town to do it in. My hometown, actually.
Oh, yeah. Belfry. Wow.
Yeah. And so so this is a common narrative. And so there are folks within eastern Kentucky who are living and who have lived amazing lives. Yeah, some of those folks left and went to places like Lexington. One of the most interesting stories is about a boy who was born in Hindman, Kentucky, back in the 50s, and his name was Lige Clark. Lige Clark ended up in New York. He was a member of the Mattachine Society. He helped to letter the first signs for the first march on the White House back in the 60s. Mm. He will have a nationally syndicated column, the first national gay column in the country. He and his partner will write three books during the 70s. And so he always kept up his Appalachian identity. That was central to what he did. And so those are stories that aren't supposed to be in eastern Kentucky, right? But they are certainly there.
That's great. Well, everything you're doing is about preservation. This archive, your work at the Mary Todd Lincoln House, and your historical walking tours. So have you always been a history buff, you know, ever since you were little, and someone who's conscious of the way history can slip away if somebody doesn't step in to preserve it?
Very much so. I can honestly say I have always been a history buff. In fact, in the fourth grade, I clearly remember I was in a split class with fifth graders. And when the fourth graders were supposed to be doing their spelling lessons, the fifth graders got their history lesson. Mm-hmm. And I was always sneaking over to hear the fifth graders' history lessons. I would get in trouble for it every day. I still can't spell worth a lick. But I've kept up with the history pretty closely. And that may have come just from my own personal experience. In 1977, eastern Kentucky suffered a devastating series of floods. And so when I was born just 5 years later, sort of personal history was tough to find. Mm-hmm. So both of sets of my grandparents, both of their churches, all of that had been swept away earlier. So I grew up, you know, in, you know, brick ranches, that sort of thing, very contemporary stuff. And so that gave me a sort of natural inclination to want to know these stories.
Right.
And so local history has always been something that's fascinated me.
I think when you grow up in Appalachia, you're told all the time you're from a disappearing culture and stuff, so you're a little bit more aware of that. Well, tell us a little about the historical walking tours you do.
Oh, sure. I started these really as a lark in grad school. Of course, when you're in grad school, you're completely impoverished, and so a little side hustle was beneficial. And they started by accident. Always interested in local history. Lexington is lucky to have so much of it. And I started to gather these stories, and friends would have me when their parents were visiting or they had folks in, take them around downtown. And after one tour, a friend gave me a bottle of Buffalo Trace. And I realized that maybe there was something here. And so I started my my walking tour soon after. And so that's I'm now in my fourth year.
Yeah, so you'll barter with people, it sounds
exactly.
like. Well, we're so lucky to have you at the Mary Todd Lincoln House and to have it here, have it preserved. I remember you telling me about Sally Field coming there when she was playing Mary Todd Lincoln in the Spielberg film. So do people just come from all over the place to visit the house?
Yeah, the Mary Todd Lincoln House gathers folks from all across the world. I mean, today we had, you know, folks from China were there yesterday. There were folks from the Southern Congo. So we usually get about 15,000 visitors a year. This is our anniversary. We opened 40 years ago in June of this year, saved from destruction when Rupp Arena was being built. They got the rest of the neighborhood, but the governor's wife at the time saved the Mary Todd Lincoln House. So that's why we're right beside Rupp Arena. It's a great place to see the world right there in the front hallway of the Mary Todd Lincoln House.
Now, there's another house that she lived as a child. Now, it was over closer, like in the around the Carnegie Center, right? Is it still
A little. So, in fact, if you go to the Mary Todd Lincoln House website, we have a free downloadable walking tour called Lincoln's Lexington. Right. And so it has several sites. So right there on Gratz Park, a house called the Ridgely House, that was her school as a little girl. The house she was born in was on Short Street, and sadly it was demolished in the 1880s. But there are a number of institutions here in Lexington. If you ever go to the Village Idiot, the restaurant on Short, that would have been the post office Mary used when she was growing up here. So there's a lot of vestiges of Mary's time in the city of Lexington.
Well, you are just doing such important work. Well,
thank you.
People's stories, you know, that could be so easily lost, people's stories who were hidden for so long, and also preserving the history of really famous people like Mary Todd Lincoln.
Right.
So just every avenue. And so I really appreciate all the great work you're doing.
Well, thank you.
Thanks so much for being here with us today.
Thank you, Silas. It was a real pleasure.